Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
It's going to get very spooky, very strange, very mysterious. This is Avery After Dark, and I'm your host, Avery Ross. We have hauntings, mystery galore. First up, we're taking a look at the Beck Haunting in Indianapolis. A true story, a haunting on Delaware Street. A case that got so crazy, police, scientists, and the press all got involved. But that's not all. After that, a haunted night shift at the mall, a double doppelganger encounter on Halloween night, and a haunted cat. Our last story is pretty touching. I'm just warning you, you may get a little misty-eyed. Even you fellas. Just giving you a heads up. If you are enjoying Avery After Dark, leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Let me know where you're tuning in from. And if you want bonus episodes every month, join the Patreon or memberships on YouTube. You get that bonus episode every month, and it means so much to me. Thank you to all who have joined. We are in total spooky season mode right now. Let's get right into our haunting. Now, this story, this case, I've actually never seen it covered anywhere. This is a haunting on Delaware Street. March 11th, 1962, a quiet Sunday night in Indianapolis. Inside 2910 North Delaware Street, lived three people. Renata Beck, 32 years old, divorced, originally from Vienna. Her mother, Lena Gimmick, 61, a recent immigrant from Germany, and Renata's teenage daughter, Linda, 13 years old. The home was built in 1900. It was then a four-bedroom, two-bathroom. Renata worked as a local restaurant operator. Her mother, Lena, was diabetic, and she believed this would be a great place to help take care of her mother and daughter. It was comfortable, but it didn't seem to be a very happy household, according to neighbors. Those who lived close to the house said they heard screaming, these big arguments, and door slamming on occasions. But on that Sunday night, everything was calm until a little after 10 p.m. Renata was washing dishes. Her mother was drying. And without warning, a heavy German beer glass lifted itself out of the kitchen sink, sailed through the air, and then dropped, exploding into 100 pieces on the floor. The women were stunned. Neither of them had touched it. Before they could speak, they heard it. A crash, thundering from upstairs. When they ran up to investigate, they found a chunk of German crystal shattered on the floor. It had been sitting on the bookshelf just moments earlier. No intruder, no earthquake, just broken glass everywhere. The family quickly flees to a hotel, and that's where they stay for the night. When they arrive back to their house the next afternoon, they hope that whatever it was is over. Not long after they got home, it started up again, only louder, meaner. A mirror exploded in the upstairs hallway. A glass ashtray hurled itself across a table, across a room, and slammed into a wall. Another piece of crystal shattered without anyone near it. A cup of hot coffee shot through the air toward Renata's mom, almost hitting her. By 11 p.m., the Becks couldn't take it anymore, so they called a family friend and then police. The women saying it sounded like the whole house was breathing. This call to police was a strange one, not one that officers get every day. Sergeant John Mullen was the first to respond. He found three frightened women in a house that looked like it had been hit by a tornado. There was broken glass everywhere. He's looking around and there's dents all over the walls. The women tell him about what happened, and in turn, he suggests that it was a vandal, a prankster, maybe a kid with a pellet gun or a slingshot. But all the windows were closed. The place was locked up tight. and they look and there were no signs of any forced entry. But Sergeant John Mullen believed this was the result of someone pranking the family, the women, even going so far as to say that a hi-fi stereo in the home or area emitted sound waves and shattered the glass. Well, the family didn't think so. At the house, Officer Ray Patton joined him a short time later. He accompanied the women upstairs to look at the damage, and on a dresser, the family had placed three remaining glasses from a set of six on top of the dresser, covering them with a hat, and officers made reports of this in the notes. Then, as he turns to leave the room, that's when it happened. Something hit him square in the back, hard enough to leave a bruise. When he turned around, he saw one of the glasses from under the hat was now lying shattered on the floor. Whoa, there was no one else in the room. And later, when asked to describe the incident, Officer Patton said only this, quote, "The glass came from nowhere. I don't know what to tell you," end quote. Well. And Mrs. Beck also notes that her purse is missing. The family can't find it anywhere. So this is just another strange layer of this weird story. So from here, it just gets weirder and weirder. Within days, the women began waking up with small puncture marks on their hands and arms. Tiny holes close together, like teeth marks. They showed police. The media was showing up, so they even showed reporters. One report stated that officers on duty watched as new marks appeared while the women sat perfectly still. And these marks didn't look like a family member could be doing it, or even a human. The bite marks were super small. A friend of the family said they look like, quote, a bat's teeth, end quote. There would be no bats in the house or anywhere around these women. So how was this happening? It was also super strange, as the women say the marks didn't hurt. They would just appear and then fade away. As I mentioned, the press got a hold of the story, and this was just too weird not to report on. And from there, the story starts circulating in the news. Soon, the street was lined with neighbors. People stood on the sidewalks hoping to catch a glimpse of something flying through a window. But police were really tired of this already, so they brought in this special sound detection device, something to pick up vibrations or hidden wires. They were really wanting to get a rational explanation for this. This couldn't be a ghost. This couldn't be a poltergeist. They were going to get to the bottom of it. While the machine ran, everything went silent, but once it was turned off, the glass would start flying again. At this point, it had been days, and the family was pretty desperate. They reached out to a family friend, a local businessman named Emil Noceta, who came to the house and began taking notes of what he saw, what he witnessed. The Becks knew him. They knew he was level-headed, very rational, so they wanted to get his take. He was also someone the family trusted. And so he did. He came to the house, investigated the haunting, and he said the activity seemed to move in phases. First, only glass broke, then plates. Then it escalated to furniture, and then knives. You gotta hear this. One night, Noceta and the family heard a loud crash coming from the kitchen. When they rushed in, they found three steak knives on the floor, arranged in the shape of a perfect cross. They're super spooked, but they put the knives away and then returned to the living room. And then, minutes later, the sound came again. They went back into the kitchen to find the knives were back on the floor in that exact same shape, across. Noceta swore he saw it with his own eyes. He told reporters, quote, "I've never seen anything like it. Never," end quote. By mid-March, it was pretty out of control. This case was so bizarre, so strange, scientists began to take notice. Dr. William Roll, a respected parapsychologist, traveled from North Carolina to Indianapolis to investigate. We've covered a couple cases that Dr. William Roll has worked on, and he seemed to be kind of a straight shooter. He appeared on the series Unsolved Mysteries quite a bit. Great show. So he moves into the house for nearly a week, sleeping on a cot in the corner, keeping notebooks by his side, recording everything he saw, everything he felt, everything he heard. 6 days. And Dr. Roll documented more than 100 separate incidents. Objects moving on their own, loud rapping, sudden cold spots, and most disturbingly, the appearance of those tiny bite marks. But there's always a possibility that this is some kind of trick, a hoax. Dr. Roll knew this, so he teams up with another psychologist, Dr. David Blumenthal, and they decide to observe the family members separately. And one night, while Dr. Blumenthal sat in a bedroom holding Lena's hands, and Dr. Roll waited in the kitchen with Renata, all of a sudden they hear these thuds, these knockings coming from Lena's room, these loud banging sounds. It wasn't her, she wasn't moving, and there was no one else inside the room. Dr. Roll would later write, quote, "No natural cause could be determined. The events defied all attempts at explanation," end quote. This haunting reportedly went on for 16 days of near constant activity. The family was experiencing it. Scientists came in and observed the activity as well. Police, officers were seeing this, and journalists as well. And then on March 22nd, as mysteriously as it began, the activity started to fade, and the women started cleaning up what was left of their home. There were dented walls, shattered mirrors, broken glass everywhere. But get this, the first week of that haunting, Mrs. Beck reported that her purse was missing. Throughout all this chaos and craziness, she couldn't find her purse anywhere. It was like it disappeared. Well, around that time of the 22nd, her purse mysteriously reappeared. Mrs. Beck said it nudged her leg like something invisible was trying to get her attention. And when she looked inside of her purse, most of her cash was gone. What would a ghost need cash for? I don't think they need it on that side. On March 26th, the police were called to the Beck's home one final time. And this is pretty scary. A neighbor had found Lena lying on the ground unconscious. When officers arrived, one claimed that he saw her throw a smoking tray across the room and overturn a piano bench. She was arrested for disorderly conduct. Just when things couldn't get any weirder, there's something going on with Grandma. Renata protested, begging them to stop. She said her mother was diabetic and was in shock. She wasn't violent, but officers didn't listen. Lena spent the night in the city jail. The next morning, a judge ordered her to return to Germany within 10 days. She agrees, and get this, once she leaves the country, the haunting completely stops. The activity was done. It was over. What is going on here? This is crazy. The house on North Delaware Street was left in ruins. There was cracked plaster, splintered wood, feathers, and glass embedded in the walls. After this, police quietly closed the file and wanted to move on. After the activity stopped, the press, the news, they also stopped reporting on it. Whatever was going on in that house was over. But there was someone who didn't forget it, Dr. Roll. He included the Beck case in his 1972 book, The Poltergeist, describing it as one of the most perplexing hauntings he'd ever encountered. He ruled out fraud. He didn't think this was any kind of hoax. He ruled out hallucinations, imagination, and environmental causes. He didn't think there was anything in the walls, any critters that could be making this noise. What he couldn't rule out was that this was something paranormal, something otherworldly. So what really happened on Delaware Street? Was this a vengeful spirit? Many believe it's a poltergeist. It's believed that it's a poltergeist because they usually make a lot of noise. They're very noisy ghosts. They're entities that like to cause chaos, cause a stir. And that's exactly what this one did, clearly. But as I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, many wonder if this was psychological. As we talked about, neighbors heard a lot of fighting, arguments, and tension coming from this house. Women fighting, a young teenage daughter. There was also the recent divorce. Could that play into it? What do you think? But according to scientists, parapsychologists, and psychologists who witnessed the activity, there were a lot of occurrences and activity that couldn't be faked, or it would be really hard to imagine how it would be faked. So if it was a hoax, it was one that fooled police, reporters, scientists, and neighbors. If it wasn't, and this was real, There was something very old and angry in that house. The Becks never returned to the home, and the property has changed hands quite a few times over the years. Longtime residents have said the house does have a certain vibe. It feels off. But I gotta know, what do you think? Let me know in the comments. Was this a haunting, or are you still not convinced? I wanted to cover this case because I actually have never heard anyone else cover it. I hope you found that it was spooky and weird because, hey, that's right up our alley. This is a true story, still unsolved, one of Midwest's greatest mysteries. Now, our next story. This is the feet in the dressing room. I work night security in a dying mall. I've been here for years. It's boring, but that's what I like about it. But Halloween is always a pain. My coworkers love pulling pranks. A few years back, someone put a mannequin in the employee bathroom stall. That same year, they replaced the mall PA message with a clip from The Exorcist. So when last year rolled around, I thought I was ready for it. It started around 11:30 p.m. I was doing my rounds and decided to check the security cameras. The woman's fitting room camera, it only shows the hallway outside the stalls, was on, and I noticed something weird. Don't worry, we can never see inside the stalls, just the hallway leading up to it. But one of the stall doors was closed, and there was a pair of feet visible underneath. Bare feet. Pale. Now here's the thing, the store had been closed for hours. No employees were on the floor. I'd already done the lockup myself. I figured this was one of the associates hiding out, trying to scare me. So I walked down there. When I got to the fitting room, the door to the first stall, the one I'd seen on the camera, was closed tight. I crouched down, expecting to see those same feet. Nothing. Just an empty floor, gray tile, and a couple of dust bunnies. I yelled out, "If anyone's in here, the store is closed." I didn't hear a peep. So I went through, checked every stall, all empty. I still thought it was a prank. As I was leaving, I called out, "Very funny, joke's over." Went back to the monitors, and there they were again. The feet, same stall, same pale ankles, but this time, the toes were pointed towards the camera. I froze, staring. I went back down there. When I reached the fitting room hallway again, the air was colder. I got down on my knees and saw nothing. The feet were gone. I got back to the security office and radioed my coworker Jeff and asked him if he saw anyone around the mall. He said no. No employees, no customers. This happened on and off throughout my entire night shift that Halloween night. Seeing those feet, going to check, but finding no one there. I couldn't make sense of it. Maybe there was some strange glitch in the camera. I don't know. Before I left, I asked to see the archived footage. I wanted proof that this wasn't in my head. And it was gone. Not corrupted, not deleted, just gone. Every recording from that Halloween night was missing, replaced with blank static. I can't explain it, but it was one of the strangest things that I've ever experienced. That is so eerie. Working night shifts anywhere can be spooky, but especially at a mall where there's some phantom bare feet. Oh, yeah, that's totally creepy. This next story is so unsettling. I can't wait for you to hear it. This is Good Night, Dear. I've never shared this with anyone before, but every October, I can't help but think about what happened to me a few years back. After thinking about it again recently, I just have to get it out. It started on Halloween night. I was about 20 at the time, and I went with a few friends to one of those haunted houses outside of town. One of the ones in a creepy old building with actors dressed as monsters and jump scares around every corner. Nothing crazy, just the typical stuff. But there was this one room that felt off. It was too quiet, too dark, and it felt oppressive. Almost like something was pressing down on us. We all felt it, all of my friends, but we chalked it up to the atmosphere of the place. That night, after the haunted house, I went back to my parents' house. They were out of town for the weekend, and I had the place to myself, which is always nice. I was tired, but I felt weird. Like I couldn't shake the feeling that something had followed me home. Anyway, I got inside, tossed my keys on the table, and started heading upstairs to my room. As I walked down the hallway, I passed my parents' bedroom. The door was slightly open, and I saw the dim glow of the bedside lamp casting a soft light across the room. And there they were, my dad, laying in bed, facing the ceiling, and beside him, my mom. She was turned away from him, facing the wall, and he was just laying there, like he was just relaxing before sleep. They must have gotten home early. Strange, I thought they would have let me know. And I didn't see their car outside, but here they were. As I walked past the door, it was dark, but I saw my dad sit up. He didn't say my name, but spoke softly, almost like he was half asleep. "Good night, dear," he said. He was so calm, so normal. "You're back early," I said, but no response. "Odd." "Night," I said, as I made my way back down the hall to my room. I didn't think much of it at first. Was tired from the day, so just closed my door and went to sleep. I felt uneasy, but thought it might just be from the haunted house. The next morning, I woke up early. I had a few errands to run and needed to get some breakfast. I walked down the hall, past my parents' bedroom, and saw their bed neatly made. Room empty. I walked downstairs to the kitchen and looked out the window to see my parents' car pulling into the driveway. I went to the window to check, and sure enough, there they were. My parents arriving home, pulling their suitcases from the trunk. I ran outside, my parents greeting me. "Hi, sweetheart." My mom hugged me. "We missed you," she said. I told them about what happened, about seeing them in their bedroom the night before, after coming home from the haunted house. They were startled, as they were still hours away last night. My dad ran in to check the house, but found no one inside. I couldn't shake the memory of my dad sitting up in bed, looking at me, speaking to me. I had seen him, but he wasn't there. Then who was? I still can't explain it. Was it a doppelganger? A ghost? Some kind of trick of the mind? Every October, I can't help but remember that night, seeing my parents when they weren't supposed to be there. Sometimes I wonder if I'll ever get an answer. My parents believe me, sure, but they've also asked if I was just spooked from the haunted house and imagined it, which is a natural assumption, I guess, but no, this was real. Has anyone else experienced anything like this? You know, I've heard of doppelganger encounters, but this is the first one I've heard of where there is two doppelgangers, something impersonating her dad and something impersonating her mom as well. And now for our last story. This one is very mysterious, but also very touching. This is Winston the cat. I work at an animal shelter here in Birmingham. I've always been an animal lover. I connect with them more than people most of the time. I've been at the shelter for about 5 months, and it definitely has its highs and lows. But when a pet gets adopted by a loving family, it's the most incredible feeling. We have cats, dogs, and some pocket pets here. 3 weeks ago, we got a new intake, a gray and white cat named Winston. He was about 7 years old, quiet, heartbreakingly gentle. His owner had passed away, an older man who, according to the family, lived alone and treated Winston like his son. The family said the two were inseparable. When the man died, Winston supposedly stayed by the chair he passed in and wouldn't leave it. Yeah, we all got choked up hearing that one. Family said they couldn't keep him for whatever reason, so Winston came to us. And almost immediately, things got weird. The first night he was there, the lights in the cat room started flickering. Not all of them, just the ones over Winston's cage. Maintenance checked it, changed the bulbs, and about 15 minutes later, he started flickering again. Then toys started moving. The little felt mouse in front of Winston's cage would be gone at night and back in the morning. Sometimes on top of the cage, sometimes across the room. The first couple days were hard for Winston. He wasn't eating much either. Pets can become very stressed out in the shelter environment, so I made sure to sit with him each day, petting him, and he was just as sweet as could be. But I'd often see him at points. He'd just be sitting there, staring out of his cage, eyes fixed on something only he could see. About a week into Winston's stay, The night custodian named Jimmy came to me around 7 p.m. He looked spooked. We close at 6, and I was up at the front desk finishing some things before I was going to leave for the evening. When Jimmy said, "Hey, there's an older man back there in the cat room." I leaned in and told him we were closed, and he could come back in the morning, but he didn't move. He just stood there facing towards one of the cages. My stomach dropped. We had been closed for a while, and I checked the place myself and knew everyone was gone. Jimmy and I walked back to the cat area to find no one, nothing. "He was just there. Where did he go?" Jimmy said, looking around. I looked over and saw Winston standing up against the bars of his cage, purring like crazy, louder than I'd ever heard him. His eyes were wide, like he was seeing someone he loved. I already knew the answer, but I had to ask. "Hey, Jimmy, where did you see the man?" Jimmy pointed, saying he was standing right there. I knew it. The older man was right in front of Winston's cage. I knew what it was, and the staff even got used to it. Some of us even said goodnight to the empty cat room before leaving for the evening. We had all discussed the activity and felt that Winston's owner, that older man, was here in ghost form, keeping his best friend company. At least Winston wasn't lonely anymore. Then one Saturday, a family came in, young couple, two little girls. The second the girls walked by Winston's cage, he perked up, started rubbing the bars, meowing like he hadn't ever. They spent nearly an hour with him, and by the end, it was a done deal. They adopted him on the spot. They had just lost their cat and said that Winston was perfect. I'll never forget when they carried him out. Winston just looked so content. A week later, the family sent photos. Winston sprawled out on the couch between the girls, very happy, belly up, getting spoiled with treats. And ever since Winston left, the shelter's been completely quiet. No more flickering lights, no moved toys, no mystery visitors after hours. I hope he knows that his Winston, his baby, is being loved and cared for, and now he can find peace. Is that not the sweetest story? I am a big-time cat and dog person. I'm an animal lover in general. I've lost count of how many cats and dogs I have because I feel like I'm just collecting them at this point, but I love stories like this. Animals really are so intuitive. They're like children. They can pick up on things that we can't see. And if you've ever had any sort of paranormal activity with your animals, let me know in the comments. Thank you so much for tuning in for this episode. I hope you are having an amazing spooky season and a great October. Next episode, I'm already working on it. I've got so much more eeriness coming your way. Until then, I'm Avery Ross, and this is Avery After Dark.